For Comics Sake on iTunes.
At For Comics Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For Comics Sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
For Comics Sake presents
Baby Got Bat
Issues. This podcast is rated M for mature content, not approved by the Comics Code Authority.
All right, here we are, everybody. It is our next Baby Got Back issues, which is my pick. I'm Ryan. We're doing it on a creepy Halloween.
Ooh.
It is scary here today, I know. But my pick of the month is The Wake, which is by Scott Snyder as the writer. We have art by Sean Murphy. And then we have color by Matt Hollingsworth. Almost forgot about him. We wouldn't want to do that.
Oh, no.
Exactly. So, but originally this was a 10-issue run that was done by Vertigo in 2013. And it is actually the winner of the 2014 Eisner Award for Best Limited Series.
Mm-hmm.
Something strange is going on underwater off the shore of Proto, Alaska. Dr. Lee Archer, a catologist, that's someone who studies whales and dolphins.
Oh, I knew that.
Yeah, I bet. Is called by the Department of Homeland Security to join a team investigating. But given Dr. Lee's political activism and her firing from NOAA, she's not too eager to take part. Until they make her an offer she can't refuse, they'll help her get back custody of her son. Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy's smart, thrilling, and eerily provocative The Wake is a welcome surprise. Dr. Lee is asked to help investigate because she previously experienced the mysterious sound that has been recorded in Alaska. She joins a team of mostly unfriendly scientists, including the former boss who fired her from NOAA, all of whom have been assembled under different pretenses. What they find is a species of underwater creature no one has ever seen before, and so the mystery begins. So this is a 10-issue run, and there's actually, it's almost like a little bonus because it's two stories in one, essentially.
You got a part one and a part two.
Yeah, you got a part one and a part two. Which,
separated by hundreds of years.
200, as a matter of fact. So I've read this before. I read this about 2.5-3 years ago. I know how I felt about it. That's why I'm picking it. But now this is something that, this I would say is a, this is a type of book that you and I haven't necessarily talked a lot about on our podcast because we do focus a lot on some of the superhero stuff. This is a lot different. This is independent. This is creepy. This is much darker. So I'm very curious what your initial reactions are.
The initial reaction when you announced it was, I've heard of that, but yeah. I know nothing about what it was, and I didn't even know enough that it was Scott Snyder, but definitely read some of his work. And if I'm not mistaken, this is the same Sean Murphy who works on Chrononauts with Mark Miller. I'm pretty sure they are the one and the same. If not, then scratch that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so the initial reaction going in, I didn't even want to read anything of what it was about.
I like it.
It's one of those books where I just skipped that description you just read. I just opened it up, and, it was...
And you were wowed by how fantastic the art is. It is one of the most beautiful books I have ever seen.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, and
I really enjoy... Sean Murphy has a very particular art style, something that you don't see a lot. It's what I call a scratchy style. I don't know how else to define it.
And re-looking at this art, this looks like Chrononaut stuff.
Oh, okay.
So, unless it's two different Sean Murphy.
Sure.
But yeah, I think I read the first 7 issues in a first sitting, and then went to bed, woke up, read the last 3-ish or so, and then... So,
well, it's good enough for you to keep going, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't
read
it.
You didn't throw it out. I'm glad you didn't put it in the garbage.
It's still on my hand.
Appreciate that, yeah.
It is listed on eBay, though, so I can get rid of it as quick as I can.
All right, smart, yeah. So, but yeah, here we go. We're going to dive in right now to issue number 1. We start out with something called The Quest. And we are, we know as the, well, we don't know quite yet. We're going to just double check here. We start out, it's actually a, I know we're spoiling this book, but in a way I almost want to say this right off the bat.
Yeah.
We're seeing something that happens much later in the book.
the whole concept of Baby Got Back issues is hopefully the fact that it's a book club and it's all month. You have a chance to read this. So if you're listening to it, hopefully you've already picked it up, have read it now, or have read it in the past. So anything we talk about is, you know, it's book club.
Exactly. So,
but yeah, we basically cut to, you know, scenes that we're going to see in part two. Yeah. Characters in part two.
So, but we start off with one of the main characters in the book, and she is... she is clear that she works with the ocean, and she hang glides down out of this platform, and she makes some kind of a call, and it's actually her, I don't want to say pet dolphin, but it's basically a dolphin that she has trained.
I want to say a co-worker.
Yeah, there you go. Do you want that? Someone that is helping her in the field, let's say.
Yeah.
And we have, the dolphin's name is Dash. She's a really cute dolphin, and she has something... something mechanical that is connected to him. And then she looks up and she says, "It can't. We're so close." And you see a massive, massive tidal wave filling up the entire city. And you see the dolphin swimming away and she is flying away on her hang glider.
Yeah, it was quite the intro there because it's an intro to part one.
Yep.
Right before chapter one, it's your little teaser, your little cold open, if you will.
Exactly. So then you turn the page and we're officially beginning, and then we have something called The Call, and we are 200 years earlier than what we just talked about in Gig Harbor, Washington. And we start off with our, grab my notes here. We're starting off with our other main character, which would be... Dr. Lee Archer, and she is, looks like she's feeding a big, massive whale. She's in one of those blow up, like, not a boat. Let's just call it a boat.
Sure.
Like a raft.
You're
like,
not getting like any a, help from like me because I don't know.
Like a boat raft type situation there. But anyways, she is, she's feeding to this big giant whale, and she has a Bluetooth in her mouth, and she's having a conversation with her son. And for the most part, it's pretty nice, but he is talking about moving somewhere, and she has to get some stuff together for him, and they are HDMI cables. And that is not necessarily the most important thing of this conversation, but the HDMI cables is something that comes up later on in the book.
Yeah.
And she's just minding her own business. She's talking to her son. She's doing her job. And we have a helicopter that comes and lands in the water right in front of her. And we have a new character that we're introduced to, someone by the name of Agent Aster Cruz, Department of Homeland Security. And she says to her son, Parker, that I'm going to call you back. And he apologizes right away. And the best way that I can describe this is he needs her help because of her expertise to find out what this mysterious sound is at the bottom of the ocean. And she's not really interested whatsoever, so he decides to grab this thing and actually play the sound for her. Now, I'm not even going to attempt to make the sound of what this is, but the way it's spelled out is, yeah, it's O-O-O-E-E-E-E-I-I-I-I. Yeah.
But it's probably got something creepier tone.
Oh, absolutely. And then he's asking about whale songs. And he's asking, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's supposed to be repetitive. And he's like asking about all this stuff. And she's just trying to kind of, she's figuring this out. And
she's very, he basically wants her to join the team, and she's very quickly to just keep denying him every chance he gets to further explain himself. She wants nothing of it. Because you can see that when that sound goes off, it kind of irritates her a little bit. And
Cruz asks her, have you heard anything like this before? And you see kind of a super quick, somewhat of a flashback in her head. Is it a flashback? Is it a premonition? Is it something that happened? Is it a dream? Do we necessarily know? No, we do not yet. But she says no. And eventually, he does get her to come along. Otherwise, there wouldn't be much of a story here.
Yeah, yeah. Book's over then.
Yeah, book's over, right? And, but yeah, she does come along, and he's willing to help her with her son. And, yeah, for the most part, it is a win-win situation, I would say, for her.
Yeah, so, and the helping with the son, because we're led to believe that there is a separation, that she gets certain custody at certain dates, like, between, you know, so he uses that as an incentive, basically, because she's having trouble to make time with her son.
So they're coming in, they're 10 hours later, they're in Alaska's South Slope, and they land, and she's kind of like, okay, where's the DHS? She's talking about, like, home base. Where's home base? And she's like, where are all the tents? And he says, our tents are a little bit below our pay grade. So they step into this ladder, and they move down into this big, open, kind of, it looks very factory-like, kind of like something you would see, like, in The Flash, you know, just...
It's like a lab.
Yeah, it's a big lab with computers.
It's a C-lab.
There you go. Shh, they don't know that yet.
Oh.
And then she gets introduced to everybody else that is on the team. We have... Let's see if I can... I have some of these names written down here.
We got Dr. Marin, who is the author of a book called Legends of the Ocean that she...
That's right.
Yeah, yes. She's a big fan of, so yep. She... Pretty much kind of finished his sentence.
He kind of has a funny joke, and he goes, oh, it makes a pretty great doorstop. That's what he thinks about his book.
As most authors say about them.
Exactly. Kind of we have a guy named Meeks, who kind of seems to be the hard ass of the group. And he kind of claims that he already knows her already, but not really. He knows her from the person that's... from someone else that's on this boat, and it is the person that originally fired her from her job.
Is that Bob?
Is it Bob?
Guy coming down the ladder.
Bobby. Yeah.
Bob.
Yeah.
So you got Bob, Meeks, and Dr. Marin, the other people that are the team that has been assembled to investigate this mysterious noise recording.
But it is pretty funny because I think our Lee Archer, I think she is pretty uncomfortable with the situation, and she wants to go back up, and then she realizes what she's actually in is a big, massive, big-ass submarine.
Yeah.
And they're going
imagine
down.
A 6-inch sub at Subway, and then double that. It's a foot-long sub.
Yeah,
and then
the real deal. And maybe even a couple more inches.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this thing is huge. And they're going down at an alarming rate, and right away, she's like, how are we going down so fast? They kind of explain the science behind it, science that you and I do not understand.
For yourself, I'm a science whiz.
Are you?
But I just refuse to share it with the world.
Oh, well, there you go. And then they go down...
But there is something that when he is talking about the science that is kind of intriguing because she's like wondering how they're surviving down there because of the level and...
Cause not only because of the level and because they're going down so fast. They're talking about the atmosphere and the breathing and...
Yeah, but this thing called designer breathing gas is what they refer to and...
But you see, she sees something. She says, Jesus, what is that? And then we have this... Our main guy that we were introduced to here. Cruz. Hmm. There we go. Cruz. She sees something called a ghost rig. And what it is, it's a really big underground, or I should say underwater, oil refinery type situation. And nobody knows about it. It's secret. And no, it is not legal. And he says it has potential to extract nearly 200,000 barrels a day. And, he's talking about the oil on the ocean floor. And, and she's just fucking crazy. And then they have this conversation. They want to all know what they were told to be able to get them to come on this, trip or this, you know, this expedition.
It's like basically getting all the people to go to Jurassic Park for the first time.
Yeah.
When they brought, like, you know, all these different people and nobody really knew each other. And they didn't know what they were getting into. That's basically what this is.
Yep. So she was brought for recording. One of the other guys said that he was brought there to analyze a relic, and someone else thought they were supposed to analyze a tissue sample. And, you know, this Lee Archer, she's like, well, Cruz, which one is it? And he's like, all of them. So she's talking about all this bullshit, and then we suddenly have some shit that's about to go down. And we have a group of people coming in with a guy that is really fucked up and bloody. And we're introduced to basically two or three new characters. They come screaming in, and he looks like he's been either attacked, injured, something has happened to him, and he's bleeding all over the place. He's got some deformities. And this Dr. Archer hears that sound out of the and then she goes into this room, and there we have the first glimpse of the creepiest fucking mermaid alien thing that I've ever seen in my life.
Imagine like the creature from the Black Lagoon, but in a straitjacket.
Yeah, there we go.
It's basically what we're looking at.
And he is in the straitjacket, and he's in kind of like this tube of yellow liquid, and I'm led to believe that he's kind of subdued, and he or she can't move.
And then what I was taking from this image with it being kind of like the yellow liquid in there is that he's been trapped in there so long that he's been urinating, and it's his own. It's mermaid piss.
Yeah. You know what?
Merpiss.
That's not merpiss. That's not even out of the question.
Hey. Science fiction.
Yeah. So, something that this book deals with a lot is evolution. So, you see some crazy-ass flashbacks in here. For instance, like, right after this, we have something called the Storyteller. And you see something from 100,000 years ago. And you have, like, what would look like to be stereotypical caveman writing, like, hieroglyphics on the inside of a cave wall. And he finds something that generally you wouldn't think would be from that area. Maybe something mechanical and electronic. This weird little doohiggy, and he kind of puts it up to his eye, and it, like, pokes his fucking eye out. And that's just, like, the first start of what you see in terms of themes throughout this book. We have something called The Descent. Gulf of Guinea, 5.1 million years ago. And then we have what would be a...
Woolly mammoth.
Oh, a woolly mammoth. Looks like it's killed. And then we have a shark jumping out of the water. And then we have all, like, these ape-type people that are chasing it. But then you look, these ape-type people are actually jumping out of the water. And if you look, the artist does something really subtle here. If you look at some of these, like this one right here is a good one. You can actually see small fins on these hands.
Like the webbing.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. So you're 5.1 million years ago. And you look at this, and then you're like, okay, interesting. I could, in theory, see where these scary mermaid people may or may not have been coming from. And that right there is the end of the first issue. So I remember when I read that for the first time, I was blown away just because it is something, you know, that I never read before, and I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was quite the journey for an introductory issue of just got a lot of information there, got a lot of time span, and it was quite the ride just right off the bat.
Absolutely. So, all right, now the start of chapter 2, we have Dr. Archer is having either, we don't know yet, some kind of a vision or a dream, and she is down, you know, in the submarine, and she suddenly sees her son, and they're having a conversation. She's like, how did you get in here, Parker? And he says, they had to have a really short conversation, and he says, I swallowed so much water, Mom, so, so much. And you see him hacking up all this water, and you turn the page, and then they all are. And I remember reading this originally, and I'm like, what the fuck just happened? I'm like, why did she have that vision? But this is kind of, they're slowly introducing different themes of what these creatures may or may not be able to do in terms of some of their powers. So you have, everyone is looking at this mermaid that they caught, and They turn on some kind of a sound dampener so they don't have to listen to this thing scream. And, you know, they don't, since they're scientists, they're not really, like, shitting themselves in terms of being scared. They're more interested, but they really don't know what's going on.
Yeah, to make another Jurassic Park reference, they're not slowly getting out of a Jeep looking at a brontosaurus walking across.
No, not at
they
all.
They seem to be, unless we just missed that somewhere, but they just kind of skipped over. But yeah, they're all just kind of like, huh.
Yeah. Let's see, where are we here? Meeks wants to kill it. The person that's in charge,
Cruz,
just wants it. Cruz wants it to be more or less contained. And, you know, they're trying to figure out what to do. Anyways, I'm sorry. They talk about how it was captured, and then we get some really interesting outside images. You get kind of the flashback of how they caught this thing. And you see them, they kind of were cruising around in this, I don't know, underground capsule thing that you can probably, you know, take underwater really,
kinda,
really
kinda
deep.
Kind of like a submarine pod, if you will.
Yeah, there you go. And they end up capturing this thing, which is, let's say like a normal human is like 6 feet tall. I mean, this thing with its tail probably looks like it's got to be a good 15 to 20 feet, I would say.
Yeah, it's
got much longer than a regular Subway sub, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not a party sub for a really big party.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were able to capture this thing. And the person that was attacked, put my iPad down there, the person that was attacked has bandages and stuff hooked up to him, and they are trying to save his life. And you get one of the characters here is actually telling a folklore story. I don't want to say any of this is unimportant to the story. There's a lot of storytelling in here in terms of how some things have gotten their names over the past. Where are we here? I want to make sure we get this right. They're just standing in front of this thing. And I think they think this thing is kind of maybe unconscious, or he's just, standing there all by himself. Just, you know what I mean? Like, he's just floating there, lifeless.
Yeah.
And this scary thing, like, slams his head against the glass window. And she goes, "It likes you, Bob." I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, Bob reacts with a giant exclamation point.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he didn't scream, "Exclamation point!" Yeah. That's just him being shocked.
They ask Dr. Archer if she has anything to add to this, and she has that same type of flashback that she did earlier in the book, where it looks like she is trying to rescue someone, or she's being rescued. It's just kind of hard to see what's going on, but then she does hear that flashback, or she has the flashback of that original sound. That... Yeah, there we go.
That hurt.
That was more Halloween-ish. That's
for sure. Yeah, yeah. Because I figured it's not ooh-wee.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I wouldn't imagine it's going to be a really friendly type thing. That's for sure. They're talking about potential mutations from... they are talking about evolution, and they're talking about potential mutations. So they're saying that some humans that evolved went to land, and originally some of the humans that evolved actually stayed in the water. So they're starting to try to come up with some theories about how these creatures are even a thing. And then later on that night, you see them all just kind of doing their own shit. We've got Reeks is just, looks like he's doing something with his knife. He's like sharpening his knife with his bullets. You have Dr. Archer putting eye drops in her eyes. You have them all just kind of doing their own thing. And the person that was originally attacked is starting to have a vision of his own. And he kind of wakes up and he sees that there's flowers and that there's like wildlife. Not wildlife, but there's like plants and everything surrounding him. And he says, "Jen, And she's like, Jen, where are you? I can't find you. And someone, you know, someone's calling to him. And you see this beautiful naked woman, and she's sitting on this rock. And he's like, oh, you're waiting for a waterfall, Jen, not rain. And I'm just like, I remember reading this, and I'm like, what is going on here? What is going to happen? And
see, this happens to me a lot, so I was, this is all very relative. This is
just normal.
Relative, yeah. So this then, is just a Tuesday.
Yeah, just normal Tuesday. And then you see a, you see the two of them kissing. And then as Dr. Archer is analyzing the sound, she hears a scream. And then, yeah, and then you see the thing that was holding our mermaid is completely empty. And you're like, holy shit. And then there's a massive explosion. Oh, wait, no. Oh, wait. You know what? I jumped too far. The massive explosion that I'm talking about happens under the ground, that big oil refinery. And the other explosion that you see here is something that happens much later on. So it's kind of like a really, it can be a little confusing, yeah. But it's making a parallel from now to 200 years from now that we, with the character that we introduced right away in the beginning. So, yeah, that is the end of issue number 2. All right, off to number 3 here. We start off with the disaster, Mars, 3.8 billion years ago, and all you see is a planet, which you're led to believe is planet Earth, even though it says Mars. Maybe that's what Mars looked like 3.8 billion years ago. And you see a massive explosion. And you're just like, what the fuck? What does that mean? You turn the page, and we have another flashback with Dr. Archer and her son having a conversation. And the bird starts talking to her, and the bird says, I said that's not your son, you need to move now. I said, move, goddammit, and you are with the Murs, that's what they're calling them in this book, and there is all hell breaking loose. You have this Mur that escaped, that is on the loose, that bites Cruz. The Mur gets shot, and it is fucking crazy. Yeah, this thing is on the loose. He gets bit. After this big explosion, the part of that they're in this big underwater carrier is starting to fill up with water, and you can just feel it already. Things just start happening really, really fast. They're trying to escape, and we are with Bob here. And she goes, he had to go back and get something. And then Dr. Archer's like, now's not the time to get. And she grabs his hand. And then his arm just rips off. It is unbelievable. And then you have this Mur that has this Bob by the face. And he's making that scary sound. Oh, you know what? I actually explained this wrong. The thing with the arm did happen. But you see her holding it, and she bites it. And this is actually another vision that she's having. This is another vision. And then she looks, and then sure enough, the Mur is attacking Bob. So what had happened, in her mind, she grabbed Bob's arm and bit it, when in reality, it was this Mur. So you can see these Murs are starting to have a psychological effect on some of these people, because they have some kind of crazy-ass power that makes them have visions. And, yeah, everything is filling up. And then you see, if you take a look here, the Mur can shoot something out of, not its eyes, but, like, almost the side of his jaws.
Yeah.
And it can, like, make you have vision. So you see this dude here get shot with this venom stuff. And then he has a vision of him sitting at this big-ass table about to eat, like, this whale. And he knows exactly what's going on, that he's having a vision, and he tries to defend himself, but these things are just really, really powerful. They're all running, and they get into this one room, and they close the door, And essentially that they are kind of stuck in this room while everything else is filling in water. And they're trying to figure out if they can get outside or move around. And yeah, they are really limited to what they can do. They all jump in. Let's see here. I want to make sure we're getting this right. They are... Well, we've got one, two, three, four. Looks like we have five of them in this room now. And they jump into this pool of water. And a couple of them go into the one of those pods that we were talking about before. And they are swimming basically out from where they were into the water. And some of them are just swimming. Like, they don't have any... Like, they're not protected by anything. And that's when we have another big explosion. And they hear a different kind of sound, and they're trying to explain what it was. And they realize that this giant Murr that they captured was actually communicating. And on the last page of this issue, you just see the way they do this. There's all, like, hundreds of these Murrs.
Yeah, we went from one to hundreds.
Yeah, just that they're going to be coming to them. And, yeah, that is where this issue ends. It's really interesting up to this point because this was, when I was reading this initially, I felt like this was moving quickly. And I remember this, now I remember it's two stories in one. So there is a reason, a definite reason why it is moving so quickly. So, but yeah, that finishes up issue number three. All right, now we're on to chapter four. And we start out once again with some of the evolution type themes that are in this book. We have a scene with what I would be, what look like kind of like a caveman talking to maybe some kind of a Native American. This is 100,000 years ago. And they have some kind of a peace treaty. It looks like they are talking to each other. And it looks like the one was tricked, the caveman, and he gets blown away. The reason I bring these little schniblets up is because in every single one of these, there is super advanced technology that you wouldn't think would be available at the time of some of this happening.
Yeah, the Flintstones wish they had this kind of genius.
So. Exactly. But here we are. We have everyone trying to escape all these Murrs that are going to be attacking them eventually. So far, everybody that originally left is alive, if I remember correctly.
Is Bob gone, though?
Bob would be gone because his arm got ripped off. Okay, I'm assuming that he was not able to swim.
Yeah.
So I think he was killed. And then we have the one that gets it first, I think, is Cruz, if I'm not mistaken. But we have, because if you look here, you've got, like, about five or six of the mermaids coming and just attacking them and ripping them to shreds. There is some unbelievable artwork in here. They're really, like, I'm just, like, really admiring it right now.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
It really is. Some of the bloody scenes are pretty fucking crazy. So, anyways, they now decide that they have to try to go back from where they came from. They are able to get back in, but their team is basically half of what it was, and they have to try to go through this pipeline because they need to escape. And sure enough, these Murrs are going through the pipeline. They close a door and it crushes the skull of one of the Murrs. I just want to point this out to you right here. The eyeball that's just dangling out of it. It's unbelievable. I feel like I'm not doing this story justice because, you know, we do the Baby Got Back issues because we want people to read along with us. I wouldn't pick this if I wasn't passionate about it. There's just so much going on in here to cover in like an hour and a half that it's really hard to describe every single panel like we normally do with our individual comics. But they are able to get through this pipeline and they're in kind of a little bit of a safety net type situation, and then the entire oil rig that is down below the ocean floor completely explodes. And the best way I can say it is that they are pretty fucked right now. They are alive, but yeah. They go to another, this guy here goes to another folklore story. And he's trying to relate what's happening now to different folklore that has happened years and years ago, trying to just make sense of everything. But yeah, so these MRRs that are all over the place are a lot smarter than you think they would be. They're starting to come in to where they are, and you actually see a picture here with one of the MRRs biting all of the wires to try to cut off all the electricity, and it gets really dark. There's some more explosions, and they're trying to create a sound that the MRRs have a problem hearing. That's the best way I can describe it. And they do come up with one, but it is way too late. And then you see probably what I would say in this entire book is one of the scariest fucking things ever. Because we're talking about how big these MRRs are. Mm-hmm. I was saying like 15 feet. Well, then let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How big is this one? It's like the mama is home and means business. This thing would make Godzilla look small.
Yeah, this thing has some Pym particles in it. And
there's no doubt about it.
Growing a giant man. So.
Yeah, this thing is absolutely, absolutely enormous. And yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that as soon as I saw this, that I can't imagine it's going to end very well for them. But we will see what happens in the last issue, which is chapter 5 of part 1. All right, chapter number 5. We have another flashback, which is not that long ago, from Dr. Archer. She's on a boat with her dad. They're having a really nice heart-to-heart. And she's talking to him about why the plankton that's floating on top of the water might grow at night. Or not grow, glow. Glow at night. And then you can hear that mysterious noise. There we go. Were you blowing your nose right there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It just so happened to be.
Is that what that was?
Yep. I always blow my nose directly into my hands.
Is that? Well, you got to do that every once in a while. So here we are. This is going to be chapter 5. And we start out with this big, massive mer. This thing is absolutely ginormous.
And all the other things are just crawling all over it and just kind of...
And they're like, holy shit, what the hell is that thing? And then Meek says, goddamn Papa Fish.
Yeah, to also quote a relative line to Star Wars The Phantom Menace when Qui-Gon Jinn just goes, there's always a bigger fish.
That is very true.
And that's what is true. Hopefully there's not a bigger one than this thing, though. Because this is the big Papa Fish, as we saw.
Yeah. So she says, she wants to know where it came from. She says, smallest whale is 8 feet long. Largest is 110. So this thing would be much bigger than the largest whale ever recorded, to give you an idea. And, oh my God, unbelievable. Yeah, there's just some unbelievable art here. And
do you know the frequent release of this series on issue by issue, if it was monthly or if it was like every 2 months or if they maybe had it in the can? Because looking at this, it just seems like, man, if they were on a monthly schedule, if it came out in 10 straight months at all.
I remember the first 5 issues coming out, and then I remember it taking like a 2 or 3 month hiatus. Right. And then when it came back, I remember being confused, and then I remember that it was a whole nother story that was starting up. So, yeah, I know, because you look at some of this art, and you're like, how in the world did they... Sean Murphy is really detailed.
And with them having the plan of being, you know, 2-part stories and 5 issues each, good chance that they probably had a lot of it in the can, so it can come out on a regular schedule.
Yeah.
Because to demand this detail and complex images mm-hmm. for a monthly comic is... really running the artist down to the...
Yeah.
Down, grinding them down pretty good. So.
Oh, absolutely. Let's see here. I want to make sure we get this right. Okay. So, yeah, you have the Papa Mer, I guess what we can call him.
Sure.
And he's swimming around their entire rig. And we have the big sound that they're making. Yep. Right into the Kleenex.
Yep.
At least use a Kleenex this time.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And they are pretty much just sitting ducks in this contraption thing that they're in. And I don't know what they can really do. They pretty much are saying that they are going to go down fighting. So they get into this other underwater vehicle type thing. And they launch off from underneath the water and they are going to try to shoot their way out of all of these crazy ass mirrors. And then once again, we get some more visions. And this is interesting to me because I would love to know exactly. They don't really go into detail what these things can do to you psychologically. Like I don't think they really describe that, but I do find it pretty interesting. So Meeks is in this thing and he fires kind of like just these two little shots. And they go into one of the MERS, and he just blasts the living shit out of it. And you think that's fun and everything, and then we get the Papa MER comes and just takes a bite out of his whatever it is that you want to call it that he is. I want to say flying, but he's in the water.
I'll say one of the wings. It's a wing of this water. That's a water wing.
Yeah. And just takes a bite out of it, and the thing explodes. It does look like the thing is pretty injured and starts falling to the ground. But the capsule thing that they're in is fairly damaged. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is kind of the moment that I think they're all kind of thinking that they're pretty much finished, and this is what leads into a message being called in, as they do have some communication for a very minor moment here.
So we'll do the last conversation is with Archer and her son, and he says, Mom, is that you? I can barely see you. And she says, Parker, Mom, this is what you were working on, wasn't it? Can you stop it? Can you? You can, right? Slow down, honey. What is it? What are you talking about? The whirlpools. And she says, no. And then he's talking about the whirlpools happening all over the world. And then you see a computer monitor or a TV screen, and there's live breaking news all over the place, and they're talking about all these whirlpools that are happening all over. And he says, Parker, what's going on? She says, Parker, listen to me, honey. You get your father, you get him right now and tell him to call my old friend, Dr. Robinson. But Mom, no, just listen, Parker. You tell him that, and then right after you go to the store, you go there to get food now and water, stock up, and get your father's boat. Get it ready just in case. But what about you, Mom? Just get ready. Mom, I can't see you. Getting dark. Just listen to my voice, baby. I'm here. Please, Mom, don't go. Will I ever talk to you again? I will always be talking to you, Parker. Always. You just have to listen, honey. You keep listening. You hear me. You keep listening. And then on the very last page, it is completely dark. And all it says is, it took the creatures a day to sink the coastal cities. And that is how we end part one of The Wake. All right, here we are, part two of The Wake. We are reintroduced to a character that we saw at the very beginning of the series.
Yes.
Leeward. She is splashing around in the ocean, and she's saying, help me, and let's go fishing. And you see all these Murrs that are below her. Keep in mind, this is 200 years later now. And she says, let's go fishing. And she has this device in her hand. And she presses a button. And it sends out this screeching noise. And she jumps up on her dolphin dash. And this Murr is kind of flopping around. She grabs the Murr by the gill and takes out this massive knife. And just chops him. And then you see her gliding away with this bag of, body parts of this this Murr. So she goes back to the city, which I believe she lives in. It's a very rundown-looking city. It's called... Oh, no. That's right. It's called Outpost of Walton. Mile marker... 3,400 people. Reef maintenance and algae harvesting. So, I don't know. That must be something that they do there. But she goes to this place, and she wants to sell this mirror, this Murr head. And this is when some of the dialogue gets a little interesting, because I'm going to point something out to you. They stop using certain words, and they spell it out with, you saw that, like there is, like they draw it out with, like, fish.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure if that is one of those things where a word that they don't say, like, because they just don't dare say that word.
Yeah, it almost seems like it's a censor for a curse word, but then, it's replaced with with an icon image of, an emoji type of deal, in a way.
So, but yeah, she brings it to a guy named Pub, and she throws all these heads down, and she wants spring water, he wants to give her spring water, and she doesn't want it. She wants an ear. And I'm like, man, this is really bizarre. I don't really know where this is going. She wants an ear. So she is, he goes into this safe, and he pulls something out, and it is like a long range radio transmitter type thing. So, so she goes home, which is just in this really rundown ship thing that's kind of hanging off this cliff. And she has this transmitter thing. And then you see something interesting. You see that she puts an eye drip in her eye. And if you remember one of the stories that we had over 200 years prior, our main... Dr. Archer, you saw her putting eye drips in her eye. And I'm like, huh, that's kind of interesting. I'm like, I wonder if they're related. Like, I saw that right away, and I was like, I wonder why they had that in there.
Yeah, I guess I kind of just realized that now, as you pointed out.
So I thought that was pretty neat. And so she puts this thing in, and let's see here. They show her doing all this, but she's still having a conversation with this Pub. And it's like the conversation is dubbed over that she had as she is home. And he wants to know what she's looking for. And he thinks everything is gone. All the ice melted because the Murrs carried the warm water up to the ice caps. And they show, like, the Hollywood sign, how, like, Hollywood is all flooded over with water. They're talking about the water rose. And she has a map of the United States, which is totally not how the map would be now in terms of this time period because of how the walls are. Or not the walls, I'm sorry. How the, the walls. The walls that are up.
Big giant walls, it's gonna be terrific.
How the water is now, because the water level is so high. She is searching for something. She doesn't really know what, I don't think. But what she is doing is, she is not allowed legally to try to listen to any of this stuff because the government that there is has everything censored. Almost like they know exactly what's going on, but they don't want anybody to know. So we're done with her for now. We're now at a different part of wherever we are in the country, a place called Crane City, site of the Great Ice Tower and the largest reserve of fresh water in the 13 territories. So this is where most of the government, because now we're at the point now in the story where it's basically post-apocalyptic, you could say, and what's very little left of the government is located here. And yeah, we're introduced to a couple new characters, one of which, this old lady, she would be like, I don't want to call her like the president, but she is, we've got a guy named, I want to say Congress, I think his name is. And then her name is, I got to find this. Vivian. Vivian. She is, they're calling her governess. But I'm led to believe that she is one of the highest powers in, we'll call it the United States of America. I don't know if that's what it is anymore because they're talking about colonies. That's the best way that I can describe it. So we have the powers that be. They are basically in the nicest way possible interrogating someone, because the ear that I was talking about earlier, is not an actual ear, but it was a device that to listen to like radio signal. And they have this guy in and they're talking to him, and she's making an analogy how, the country's bird for the longest time was an eagle, but she changed it to the crane because, you know, the crane can be in water, out of water, doesn't matter. It's kind of like just symbolic. And, you think that this guy is kind of going to get off for selling this ear to this pub who eventually gave the radio transmission thing to Leeward. And just like that, this colonel guy shoots him dead. Just like that. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, so this is one of those post-apocalyptic type governments that I don't think relies on democracy. I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
So we are back now at Leeward's house, and she's just hanging out on a hammock, and she hears something. She hears like a zzz, like a radio signal, and she hears name is, and then she pops up. She's like, what the? And she's like kind of messing with it, and she goes, it says again, hello, if bzz, can hear me. And then that's when we get, you in the plane, exit now. And she is about to be under arrest by this governmental agency that now knows that she owns this piece of equipment that she is not supposed to have. So they attempt to arrest her. She flees. She actually has a couple of the mirror heads that are attached to spikes. And she smashes one of the government officials in the head and kills him. And she tries to get away and she wrestles away, but she can't quite do it. And they have her. And then they're pulling her away from her house. And you hear in the radio thing, it says, my name is Dr. Lee Archer. I'm alive down here. And I can tell you how to save the world. And that's how the first issue ends of part number 2. All right, 2-2 we are on. So part 2, chapter 2. We have a quick drive to where they're taking Leeward because she has been captured by the government, and Pub is there as well. And they are in what almost looks like what you would say like a slave ship. They are tied up with all these other prisoners, and they're basically moving the oars of the boat.
Yeah, you get a lot of
slave labor.
A lot of kind of pirate themes going on here with these.
It is basically this post-apocalyptic world now is it's like madness pretty much. And she's having a conversation. She's talking to Pub, which is right next to her. And she's talking about how she's going to get out of there. Oh, excuse me. And just like that, the colonel, which we now know his name is General Marlowe, is right behind her and pulls a gun on her. And she says, "I pledge to kill you someday." And he says, "Well, that might be, but for now you're going to take a little trip to the plank." And she's like, "Pub didn't do anything. Take me." And then he says, "You misunderstand me. I'm not taking you just you and your friend, miss. I'm addressing the whole row of you, all of you. I'm afraid it's time to go swimming." So we are now going back to Crane City, which is the head of the governmental agency. This was 11 hours earlier. And this is when they're talking about picking up the girl, the Leeward, because they now know that she's in possession of this thing that she shouldn't have. And I want to make sure, let's see here. They're basically, what they're doing here is they're showing this Vivian, how cold-hearted she is. Because she absolutely doesn't want anything to do with this girl, and I think she wants her to die. So they are on top of the boat, they're brought up, and this Leeward is going to be pushed off. And as soon as she's pushed off, she grabs on to it almost looks like a sweatshirt that's wrapped around his neck. She kind of grabs on and hangs on. And then as he's kind of bent over and she's hanging on, like if she would let go, she'd fall into the ocean. A giant mer, like as big as the ship that they're on, jumps out of the ocean and like grabs onto the boat and starts tipping it over. And people go flying everywhere and there's a bunch of explosions.
Yeah, this mer is treating this boat like it's just like a thing of
like
lumber.
It's a toy. Yeah, it's almost like it's a toy that he can play with. And yeah, this boat is going down really, really fast.
Yeah, never was I excited so much to see the mer after
Leeward
being in that situation.
I know.
And then like seeing that happen. When we first saw the mer the first time, I was scared out of my mind, like, oh shit, all these people are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
When I see the mer this time with that classic, whatever that noise is, I was just like fist pumping because I'm like, Leeward's at least going to not die from these guys, but maybe die from the mer.
Leeward is with Dash. So Dash finds her. That's her dolphin.
I'm a big fan of Dash.
Dash is one of the best characters in here. And she hangs on him, and she goes, Pub, can you hear me? And then this colonel says, I don't think he heard you, but it looks like someone else did behind you. And she turns around, and we have a giant mer face right in front of her. And Dash dives underwater, and we have this giant mer mouth opening, and opens up, and like, chomps down, and she's inside of this mer, and you realize, oh, it might not be a mer at all. Or if it is, it's almost like a mechanical base for another group is inside of this mer. And we have this pirate captain looking guy that says, "You're home, dear. Welcome aboard." And you just see her and her dolphin laying there. And you're just like, what the fuck? She's inside of this mer right now. It is just it was fucking crazy.
Yeah,
It's almost, from what I can tell, it almost looks like I'm sure there's an analogy you can come up with. Something that looks like, it's like the scene in Spaceballs when it turns into a vacuum cleaner.
Okay.
That's the best way I can think of it. It's like this giant mer is actually like a big ship.
Yeah, it's basically just, it's like if you're in Japan and Godzilla was attacking and you just decided to turn Godzilla into your apartment.
Yeah, there you go.
That's basically what they've
there
done.
There you go, that works for me. So, but yeah, that is the end of chapter 2. All right, here we go. We are on to issue number 3. Actually, chapter 3, that's what they're calling them, the second part of this story. So, she just got eaten by this giant mer, and they're inside of this ship, and the captain introduces himself. He goes by Captain Mary, and she's just laying there with her whale, and she's like, what is this place?
Your dolphin.
Or, whale. Dolphin. Whale. It's like the same thing. Someone that actually deals with that is probably screaming at their...
You think they all look alike, don't you?
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm just defending Dash.
Yeah, exactly. And she wants to know if they're outliers, which I am believed to say that some kind of a group of people that they're like against the government and they're doing their own thing.
Yeah,
and
they're rebels, the they're brown coats. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. And they have one of the MERS kind of chained up, and they say, release the ugly, and they release this thing and it chases right after her. But then we get to kind of a flashback with our colonel friend, who's the one that originally arrested her, and they're showing his time dealing with what I'm led to believe is this group that we are now seeing for the first time, this outlier group. And it looks like he was fighting them at one point. And of course, like every story in here, the MERS get involved, and it doesn't end very well. And now, right before we started talking about this, it does get a little slightly confusing in here. Just paging over this again, we have our colonel that is getting a flashback of his own. And I'm trying to explain what this flashback even looks like. It's like a silhouette of a lady, and all you really see are the blood vessels going through this dog that's next to her. I don't even know how to describe this. This would be something to post on social media,
I would say. There's a bunch of animals all over the place. There's giraffes, there's rhinos, and you're just seeing the insides of all of them. And
yeah. I don't know what's going on. There is, it's pretty fucked up. And then...
You know, even he doesn't know, because he goes, you're not telling me what's going on here. So, what? Even if the character doesn't know, how are we supposed to
know? No doubt about it. And then we're back on the ship once again, and you see that this Leeward was having a vision of her own too, and she was sleeping. So it's a very quick cut of all these flashbacks, visions, dreams. It's very, it happens really, really fast. So a couple of these pages I did have to read a couple times. There's no doubt about it. She starts talking to them about the recording that she heard. And he's saying, what is he saying here? He's talking about that there's a lot of different recordings that people have heard, but they don't think it's anything. But she says, no, it was real. And he goes, this is Captain Mary now. We all go through this, miss. And she says, I heard a message. It was by a woman named Lee Archer. And the captain's like, Lee Archer? Yes, Lee Archer. Why? What is it? And he's like, you should see something. And then we get another one of these visions that we were just talking about before that are pretty funky, I guess you could say. And they discover something, this pirate discovers something on Leeward's arm. And it looks like almost like an American flag pin that's embedded into her skin. And right away they go, seems like they tagged you, and they're likely targeting us right now.
Yeah, like a microchip or a tracer type of deal.
She was able to escape the ship originally. She was picked up by these outliers, but they now know that something really bad is probably going to happen because, unfortunately, she is marked. This character, this Captain Mary, is absolutely hilarious because this one big guy that's on the, whatever we're calling this thing, this merboat thing, says, "You've killed us, don't you see that?" And this captain just takes a beer bottle, he, like, cracks it over this guy's skull, and then he just, like, puts his foot on him and just drinks out of this goblet thing. Like, it is the most ridiculous thing ever. The governess and the colonel and all of the governmental agencies know exactly where they are right now, and they're closing in on their little ship thing or whatever you want to call it. And you have this big, you have this really big ship, or I'm sorry, plane coming in, and they are launching their, they call them crockets. So not rockets, but they have these crockets that they're going to be launching on them, and they explode, and they hurry down.
You know, after 200 years, words start to evolve, and when we live in a world where they have the cronut, yeah, it's not that hard to believe that 200 years later they're just going to call a rocket a crocket.
Yeah.
It's a croissant rocket.
Exactly. So they are now underneath in this ship that they once were, and she has the coordinates from where they where she heard this recording from. And he says, "Let's get those coordinates. What do you say to joining our rabble?" And she's like, "Huh, yo fucking ho to the end of the earth." And that is where we are going to end it with chapter 3. All right, and we're back. We are in the second to last chapter of this series. We are now tracking the coordinates, and they go to where they are. And we have Leeward making a couple captain logs on the captain's journal with his recorder thing that he has, just because, I don't know, because why not? Because that's what you do. Because the captain's not doing it, so she wants to make some recordings.
Yeah.
But they do find the coordinates, and there is a giant mer there. I think this is kind of funny. They're in, I want to say, Alaska, and it's covered in ice, and you have a giant mer. Oh, that would be probably the ship that they took, but it's like, I just like how they, it's like chomping through the ice, kind of like making its way through. That's the best way I can say it. They're all there. You have Dash is there with them, and they found these coordinates. And, through this whole thing, you see her making a couple recordings, and this is when you get to see a lot of the themes in this book coming together at once, because you have, you have a big lapse of time happening here. You have, like the pirate shaking hands with like someone from the Western civilization. Like, this is not actually happening. This is just kind of saying how this is all, coming together. But there's no sign of the government at all where they are. So they have the coordinates, and they have TNT, and they have a giant explosion, and they open up this big cave. And the captain's like, "Go on, girl, lead the way." And she has a torch, and they're walking in here, and they come to this big tomb. So we heard a mysterious sound in the beginning. We have the coordinates, and now we're investigating. And they had, there's a big explosion, and they find that there's this massive tomb. And there is a skeleton, and you see those hieroglyphics. If you remember, I was talked about it in issue, like, let's say 4, and they're like, what's in the eyes? And you see that's the same caveman person that had that thing in his eye that kind of killed him.
Okay.
And they're looking at the hieroglyphics and they realize it's a story. And you see one of the drawings, the hieroglyphics, is a mer face. And there's something glowing in the wall. So she picks it up and it's glowing. And essentially, she moves this thing. And this one lady is pretty upset because it almost is like she dragged them to this place for no reason at all. And they were looking for some sort of salvation. Some sort of what can solve everything that's going on. And there is some giant explosions on the outside of this cave that they're in. And you realize who is back. We now have the governess and the entire government, the governmental body has come for them. So they escape this cave as fast as they can. I love how she rides Dash like I want to do that.
Just like a snowmobile.
Yeah, she's riding Dash almost like a snowmobile. And they are getting the fuck out of this cave. And there is some crazy ass shit going on. You have all these different airplanes and stuff that they are showing, but I'm led to believe that these are different things from they're showing different airplanes and ships throughout time. That's what that is.
That these aren't all existing at this moment.
And you have the governess is saying fire on them, and sure enough they do. They are all this ice and stuff is closing in on them, and then you have all these mers that are starting to swim.
And it's kind of interesting when you're getting in between like the government people and the pirates that it's gotten to that point where almost like in The Walking Dead where the zombies aren't the main focus anymore, that you almost forget that they exist.
And
now, you know, the horrors of this book is coming from these groups of people.
Yeah.
And then also you're reminded like, oh yeah, the mers are the reason why this is all happening. You know?
Yes. So you have all these mers that have surrounded Leeward, and then you turn the page and then you get some sort of a vision, and there's a lady floating there, and then Leeward goes, who are you? And this lady says, my name is Lee Archer and you made it. And that's how we end chapter 4, part 2. All right, here we go with The Wake, Part 2, Chapter 5.
The final issue.
Ooh. We have, we just left off with a vision of Leeward and Archer.
A connection from our two parts of separated by 200 years.
So we start Chapter 5, and we have Leeward. She comes out of the water, and she's gasping for breath. And she's saying, don't let it be a dream. Don't let it be a dream. And these chain things come down from this giant airplane. And she gets lifted up. And she is officially caught by this governmental agency. We have the governess there. And she says, so just consider me your little dream journal and talk. And, you know, this Leeward has quite an attitude. And she doesn't want to tell her anything. And then the governess says, oh, come on. You know what they say about a dream. The only way you keep from forgetting it is to tell someone. And she absolutely does not want to say anything. And then finally she says, see, but it wasn't a dream. It was a memory. And then we kind of go into this vision state once again. And the vision that she's seen is of Dr. Archer, but in reality, the person that she's talking to is the governess. And she's like, let it all out. She's playing, like, kind of being buddy-buddy. Let it all out. You're safe now. That's right. Take it easy. And then she's just like, this, tell me I'm not just imagining this. Please just punch me in the face or something. And she wants to know, she's like, are we dead? And then the governess, looks like Dr. Archer, says, in a way, but the thing is, we don't have to be. It all depends. And she's like, on what? Well, Leeward, on you, actually. And that's when this that colonel dude that's up there socks her in the stomach basically as hard as he can. And Leeward says, I told you it wasn't a dream. And now when we see these little fish scribbles, I think that is cursing.
Yeah.
If I had to guess. I'm not really sure what that means. All I know is it's creative, and I think it's cool. It's different. Even though I don't know what it means. Yeah, exactly. And this governess, the governess says, there's a big line line here that I want to read. I just have to open a few mouths on you. No one can have too many. No many can have too many. Can one? I had this darling built myself. I call it a cookie suit. Cute, isn't it? See that tank there? That fish inside? They're called, I'm not even going to try. It's like back to us being able to pronounce names again.
The Isidius Brasiliensis.
There you go. Cookie cutter sharks, called so because they drill into you when they bite, taking out perfectly circular plugs of flesh. Little brand new mouths all over you, chomp chomp. So basically,
she's creepy.
Yeah, she is, and she wants to put Leeward in this thing to get her to talk.
It's an interesting way of torture.
Yeah, that certainly is true. And this is basically the first, the very first happy thing that actually happens in this comic comes from our colonel. Because if you look, the colonel has Leeward kind of in a chokehold, and Leeward kind of jumps up and wraps her legs around the
Vivian, the governess.
Yeah, around the governess. I want to make sure that I'm not jumping ahead too far here. Just want to double check something real super quick. There's so much freaking artwork to look at. It's unbelievable. And she's able to kind of kick her out of the way, and she grabs a gun and points it at her, and she is going to try her best to get the fuck out of there. And then you turn the page, and we got something pretty interesting going on, which you don't see in a comic book too often. You actually have to completely turn the book 90 degrees. And this is where I'm trying to come up with how would I say this
with your vocal cords.
This is where it turns into a very smart book. That's the best way I can describe it, is because we have basically a story of evolution. We have Leeward on the top of this DNA strand all the way down to, like, these cavemen. And, it's fucking crazy. But anyways, I'm going to read this real quick. A story of tears, honestly. From what we understood from all accounts, it always starts the same way, with a seed. Sometimes a seed, it doesn't take. Sometimes it's just a disaster, and it kills what's there. But sometimes the seed does take. When it is hit head on Earth, when it hit Hadean Earth or Archean Earth or ever after, we don't know. But what we do know from what was left here is that the seed took, and once it did, it started to build. And then there is a conversation here. But if you look on the other side of the book, so we have, on one side, we have this big kind of chromosome DNA strand talking about like the evolution. On the very other side of the page,
making another reference to Jurassic Park with the DNA
pretty much
animated character,
we have different points of life all the way back from, what, 100,000 years ago, and you notice that these Murs were always a part of the culture some way or the other. So then you see that the Murs once existed. Let's see here. Caveman times. I don't know what you would call that. Like BC, whatever it would be.
Prehistoric?
Yeah, times. Like prehistoric times. And then, it is fucking crazy how far back these things go. So they're telling this whole story, and then you turn the page, and then we're on this big ship where she's captured, and she's talking to herself, Leeward, come on, find a way out. There's a gigantic explosion. There's a lot of explosions in this book, isn't there?
There's a couple.
Yeah. We have the colonel grabs her, points a gun to the back of her head, and they are trying, if I'm not mistaken, they're trying to fly away, but everything is starting to be disabled. And that is when the freaking coolest thing happens. The colonel has her, and at the last minute, he decides to pull out his gun, and he fucking plugs the governess.
And what we've seen right before is the governess, there's a connection to the fact that she's got some, like, Myrrh-type, like, you see her flesh being blown away, but she's got the structure of a Myrrh or something.
And I just want to, let's see here. Let's see. She says something in here. Not just yet before she sees nothing. You can tell that she's starting to transform, and that's when he takes out his gun and shoots her in the head. And then she doesn't know what to say, and he just goes, shut up, I had a daughter, her name was Fletcher, just keep that for something. And then she says, pledge. And it's just kind of funny, they have a small joke, she's like, we both know you can't save a pledge to save your life. And she goes, get out of here. And she goes, yes sir, fuck you too sir. So she runs and she jumps off this boat, and this is when we have another flashback through time, I suppose you could call it. And we have all different points of history. Looks like we have something during, I don't know, 1700s. We have looks like something which would be like an ancient Egyptian tomb, but if you look, it is like a myrrh. It looks like a myrrh. So she's able to escape, and she jumps in the water. There's a myrrh that pops his head out of the water, just kind of looks at her, and then dives back under and swims away. And then she is reunited with Dash, and he kind of jumps on her a little bit. In the meantime, she's witnessing this big, massive ship / plane thing completely explode.
Basically kind of like the size of like a shield helicarrier type of deal.
Well, there you go.
That's kind of what we're looking at.
And, that is essentially how it ends. We see her on the very end. She has her own sailboat, and she's sailing through the ocean on her own adventure, and she has Dash, who is swimming with her. We have a Myrrh that's swimming next to her, and on her flag, she actually has a Myrrh, like a big, like kind of a Myrrh that she sewed herself onto this big flag of hers. And she says, so you remember, don't cry, be brave, it's all an adventure. The end. So I realized that The last issue was slightly hard to go through because there's just so much happening here. This would be a really good book to read and not necessarily, I mean, take our word for it because we're talking about it and we're taking the time. But there's no way that we could do a book like this justice in the hour and a half or 45 minutes that we're talking about it.
And once again, hopefully everyone listening has read it.
Yes.
With just us giving the month in advance of saying this is our book of the month. And that's what we kind of encourage, that that you're kind of going along as we are. And I definitely learned a lot more. You know, I read it once and it was like 2 days ago. And me going through and being able to flip it again, now having, you know, read all that stuff and now hearing you kind of talking about and kind of seeing some of the correlation of events, that's what kind of helps me understand it more as a whole. And that's hopefully what the listener is doing as well, as they're hopefully joining in on this experience.
If a story in a comic book is really good, I generally don't care what the artwork looks like. Because I buy comic books for the reading aspect of it. Obviously, a good artwork is just the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
But this artwork is on a whole another level, in my opinion. This is so good that I would buy a book if Sean Murphy is doing the art. I will actually buy it for the art in hopes that the story is good along with it.
I've definitely done the same for some artists, John Cassidy being one of those, who worked on Joss Whedon's X-Men, where I see him pop up on a book and I just buy it regardless.
Yeah.
And I've seen him leave books after the run and I just left it too, just because I'm like, all right, just because, you know, you get drawn to an art style that you like, so that's very understandable there.
But yeah, no, really good. I'm glad I was able to revisit it. I hope you liked it.
Yeah, very.
It's a lot to take in, there's no doubt about it. But yeah, it's creepy.
Like, I had the same kind of experience when I read Day Tripper a couple months ago. I talked about it. I think I talked about it in a non-spoiler on this podcast, and the same thing with the AB Conversation podcast. When reading that one, I've only read it once, but like diving into it, just be like, all right, it definitely needs multiple readings and stuff to kind of understand it more. And
there's nothing wrong with that, because now on the background, we have got Iron Man 3 on.
Yes.
Now, how many times have you seen this movie? I mean, in the 25? Theater, I mean, you know.
In the theater, at least 5 times.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's...
If not 6.
If you like something, if you like something, you can read it over and over, and you can get something from it every single time. So, there's nothing wrong with that.
So, that was The Wake by Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy.
Yeah.
What a great pick of the month for the month of October.
Pick of the month.
But, you know.
I think someone else has a pick of the month coming up.
Yeah, that's right, because the day we're recording this and dropping it, tomorrow is November 1st.
What? Is that how that works?
It is, yes. Which also means that there's a brand new book for the month, for this little club that we do, Baby Got Bag Issues.
It's hot. The club is hot.
Yes, and I get to choose what's going to be read this month and what we're going to record and release on Wednesday, November 30th. We always are going to release on the last day of the month. Give you a full month to check it out and read it and love it and send in questions and follow along. Well, my pick is something I'm very excited for.
Okay.
Came out in 2014, not too far off from when this puppy was collected.
Okay.
Written by one of my favorite writers.
Okay.
Dan Slott.
Okay.
Art by Mike Allred. Colors by Laura Allred. It is Volume 1, Issues 1 through 5, of Silver Surfer, titled New Dawn.
Yes.
So in trade paperback form, it is Volume 1, New Dawn. This is the first time that Silver Surfer has had an ongoing series in quite some time, if not decades. Well, it wouldn't be... it might be like 15 years, maybe.
Holy
so pretty
shit.
Close for him to have an ongoing series. But in Dan Slott's run, there's two number ones in Dan Slott's run because of, like, the Secret Wars stuff. So this goes back to 2014. It's called Volume 1, New Dawn. Check that out, issues 1 through 5. This is the synopsis. The universe is big, bigger than you could ever imagine, and the Silver Surfer, lone sentinel of the skyways, is about to discover that the best way to see it is with someone else. And this story is what made Silver Surfer retroactively my favorite comic book character. Yeah. And I'm so excited to dive into those 5 issues again. And bring a lot of facts, because I already know a bunch of facts that I'm going to throw in for the Silver Surfer pantheon, if you will. So yeah, that's going to be Baby Got Back issues number 5, which will be the book of the month for November 2016, to drop on Wednesday, November 30th. Once again, Silver Surfer Volume 1, titled New Dawn, by Dan Slott and the Allreds. So yeah. Very excited to dive back into that again, and we also do the weekly episodes if you're following along. So weekly spoiler-filled reviews of our favorite picks of the week always drop on Wednesday for the previous week's favorite books. Lots of comics.
There are so many,
and that's why we do so many podcasts.
Yeah, that is pretty much
that's
it.
Why we have a sub podcast of our main podcast. Absolutely. To talk about more comics.
Yep.
For comic's sake.
For comic's sake on iTunes.
At For comic's sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/For comic's sake.
For comic's sake on Instagram.
Or email us forcomicsake@yahoo.com.
Music by Bicycle vs. Motor Vehicle. Please visit them online. SoundCloud.com/BVSMV. As well as bvsmv.bandcamp.com.